Off the ball, GAA.
If Aidan O'Shea even thought twice about stepping away, I'd get on to pray for myself and give him a slap in the head and say, no, is not the time.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
Off the ball breakfast.
With UPMC Sports Surgery Clinic. When things don't move, rotate or bend like they used to, choose us to help you get back in action.
Good morning to you both. How are you?
Hi.
We had Morris on last week and he was saying that actually Jim McGuinness's audience wasn't what we thought it assumed it was. It wasn't just about setting up the siege mentality, that what he was trying to do was to get the CCCC to make sure that he was having the 7/8 day available turnaround, and it fell on deaf ears. Or maybe he provoked him to the point where like,
can't be seen to be handing out favours.
So it hasn't worked. But now you know, that's going to be a sellout on Saturday, right?
What's the other game?
Dublin-Tyrone.
Oh, jeez, yeah.
And I'm reading the paper today, the Cork Hurlers against Dublin is going to be a sellout.
Yeah.
Oh, you're all showing up now, aren't you?
You can't get... we're fine, we're always showing up.
In fairness, you are always showing up.
And they win.
Yeah, you can't get a general sale ticket anymore. Gone. They went on sale noon yesterday. Gone.
It's like 70,000 gone now, is it? So, more.
The tickets going to the club.
Yeah.
Now,
other clubs now, yeah. But people slept in it yesterday and it's gone now.
It's going to be 424 to 316. How are you going to stay motivated for that? You know, Cork always good flat track bullies and down over the course of history.
Yeah.
7-11 or 9-11 they scored against Antrim when I was a kid and I was like, all right.
Oh, they will.
I mixed that up. It was the other way around. It was a 124-7-11 game in 1986.
Oh, yeah?
Right, one of those All-Ireland finals where Antrim scored 7-11 against Cork in an All-Ireland semi-final, and Cork scored... Well, 7-11, 124 is a score, yeah. Now,
124 is a lot of score, a lot of points in 1986.
From Antrim, yeah. So they had 25 scores. Cork at 18, Cork won, obviously, because the 7 goals trumps everything. You know, when you concede 7 goals, nobody puts baby in the corner.
7-11, 124.
That's a wild score, isn't it?
124 is an awful lot of scores, the points to get when you... That's good going.
Yeah, well, I mean, the heavy slither. Yeah. That sequence of All-Ireland semi-finals between 85 and 89 are actually phenomenal. But anyway, we got sidetracked here terribly.
Jimmy Barry Murphy scored 3-1 that day.
3-1. That's a flex. 3-1. Yeah, we're in unprecedented territory to deal with this modern Dublin. We don't know what this is like, you know. As Kieran Shannon points out in his column in the Irish Examiner this morning ahead of coming on with us, 5 recent times that Dublin have got out of Leinster, they lose by a cumulative average 9 points. On average, actually, 9 points per game. And they only scored 1 goal in those 5 games in a game where they got beaten by 18 points. So, traditionally speaking, in modern times, ever since 2013, Leinster... Dublin get out of Leinster, was like, so what? So now how'd you prepare for this version of Dublin? What you're hoping from a Cork perspective is it's kind of like the Loud footballers a bit, is that they had their mountaintop already and now they come slowly down. But as Niall Callaghan said, like, you know, that'll mean nothing if we don't beat Cork. I think that's a very unfair amount of pressure to put on themselves because they've already solidified their place in folklore with that performance and result.
Well,
it's difficult to say you go out and do it again.
I think that they definitely need to back it up and they need next season to be a follow-on and this needs to be the foothills of a Dublin Hurling
revival.
Against
Cork, but Jesus, to do it again.
But they need to put it up. They can't get hammered. Last year they reached the Leinster final and there was some hope that actually they were going to be able to do something, and Kilkenny scored 2 goals in the first 15 minutes and the air came out of the stadium and that was the end of the Micheál Donoghue era. We probably should go on to last night's situation. Nathan made the trip down to the RSC in Waterford. It was a great game, 2-2. Mm-hmm. If you watched the first 5 minutes of both halves, you got all the action. Am I right in that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Very early on.
2 goals in the first 8 minutes.
Two goals in about 60 seconds of each other in the first 5 minutes of the second half.
A calamitous defensive error from Shells made it 1-1 for Waterford, and then it was the other way around. Waterford scored first. Park Gammon still doing it.
Yeah, goalkeeper spilled that ball. Alman tapped it in. Yeah, a little bit with the header back in the first half didn't score right. But yeah, like 2-2 draws, very entertaining down there in Waterford, but that's not the story, of course.
No, Joey O'Brien, it's Joey O'Brien's Shelburne now, not Damien Duff's Shelburne. We need to all correct ourselves from this point forward. Here he is speaking with Nathan in the aftermath of the game last night.
How did he break the news to you?
Yeah, listen, it was just in the morning, obviously, and just came in, just said it. That's me, I'm resigning, like, obviously, and I was shocked, obviously, and listen, it sort of rolled on very quickly, I guess, caught off guard, and but here he was adamant that he made his decision, so I'm sure.
Did you try and convince him to stay?
Ah, yeah, definitely, yeah, I did, yeah, and listen, of course, yeah, because, yeah, well, he was stunned, obviously, and then he broke the news, and it was fairly happened fairly quick then, obviously, he went on to the club and powers above and stuff like that, and then out to the players, and then that was really it. And then after that was done, then it was like the focus turned to the day. It was obviously a hard training session yesterday to take, and the lads, we didn't really do a lot really, and then we just had the travel down here today, done a meeting, obviously done a pre-match meeting, said a few words to the boys, and felt the response there. That I'm ultimately really, really proud of the players to put in that performance after the news that they received.
Yeah, because I think everyone around football is shocked. Did you get any sense from Damien as to why he took such a drastic decision?
No. And listen, here he's was it really? He's all in, as I said. What he's built here at this football club and the memories that he's given fans the last of a lifetime, myself included.
Yeah.
So, but ultimately, it's his decision. He made that decision. And
are you surprised? Are you surprised that he didn't the way he's spoken about you and the coaching staff has been like family members, the love he had for the players, that he didn't sit and talk to you for longer and discuss whatever issues were going on, whatever was frustrating and whatever forced him into making this decision?
Listen, as you said, he had a decision. It was his decision and he made that decision. And then that was it, really. Obviously, we all tried to talk to him and try to convince him otherwise, but he was done, like, you know, he had his mind made up. And as I said, after that sort of settles and the news of that turns around, like, I've been involved in professional football since I was 15. I've seen all ends of it, you know, and from a player to see managers get sacked and leaving and players being me getting released out of football clubs, and here, that's part of it. And I spoke to the players about this over the last few weeks. Being a professional footballer, we're the luckiest people in the world, and but sometimes with that, you're employed, you get paid to perform, and I suppose air performances haven't been a high enough standard really, and that's where we are in the league. And,
and he was pretty clear about that on Friday night, obviously, with his criticism of the players. Was there a sense that there was a disconnect emerging between him and the players?
No, definitely not, like, you know, and as I said, I think maybe them quotes or whatever, but I think other stuff he said over the time, it's saying as if standards are a bad thing, and having standards and talking about standards is a bad thing and negative. I don't think there's any player in that dressing room that would say that the manager's standards and demands over the last three and a half years now, that they haven't improved him, or they haven't improved the group and the players and them individually. Without a doubt, that is why we have achieved the success that we have over the last few years, is because of them demands and standards.
Right, so that's Joey O'Brien speaking in the immediate aftermath of the game. Very highly rated, and it looks like he's going to hopefully get an opportunity now to take the club through the European qualifiers. He's talking there about the players. Let's hear from Mark Coyle, the Shelburne captain, also speaking with Nathan in the immediate aftermath last night.
Everyone on the outside is obviously trying to figure out what happened, and was Friday night just the final point of no return, particularly with the criticism and the way he spoke about the preparation, how maybe his preparation was more professional than the players, that maybe you didn't have the same desire that the Shamrock Rovers players had. Like, was that a step too far in terms of his relationship with the dressing room? Like, how did those comments go down?
To be honest with you, I didn't pay much attention to them, because I know of how he works sometimes, and that for me it was more that maybe he was looking for a proper reaction out of us, and he wasn't happy, and neither were we. We weren't happy with our performance. We knew it was lackluster and it wasn't good enough, but I think it was more so the fact that it's been a tough season for us. You look at how we've been hit with injuries, our results haven't gone our way when maybe they could have. A bit of luck just would have changed them sort of things, and it's confidence. For me, it just comes down to confidence, and we were just lacking confidence recently, and that comes into performances, and I think that's what it was. There's no way he could have known how boys prepared, so there's no proof in that. I think that's more just him prodding us and getting a reaction out of us. That's how I looked at it, that's how the group looked at it, because we know how he works and he's got the best out of us numerous times.
So it wasn't the case lads were sitting out in the sun on Friday chilling out ahead of the game?
Nah, definitely not, look, unless he knows something that we don't, but I don't think so anyway. I know the group. The group's a good group. We're proper professionals. We do everything right, week in, week out. And we wouldn't have won the league last year if we weren't like that. So that's all I'd have to say on that.
So Joey O'Brien is in charge tonight, and again on Friday night, from talking to him there, I think this has been a whirlwind for him as well in terms of whether he wants this job at a permanent basis. What would your thoughts be on Joey taking over from Damien?
Well, first off, how he's dealt with it has been, I tip my hat off to him, because there was nobody closer to the gaffer than Joey, and for him to be blindsided as well was tougher on him, I would say, than any of us. So how he's dealt with it, I tap my hat off to him, and on how he's prepared us, him and the staff, for this game, how what they've said to us, how they've dealt with us was amazing, to be honest with you. They made us feel 10 foot tall at times. So I tip my hat off to him. Whether or not he takes the job, that's his decision again, and we have to respect that, but for me, there's no better man.
Right, that's Mark Hawley, Shelburne captain, who's seen it all at Shells. Since he's come from Finn Harps over the last number of years, and it seems to be dealing with it all right. Tricky situation, fronting up. They're both fronting up. I don't know if any of our radio listeners have seen the video of Joey O'Brien, but his eyes were red because of the way, you know, like one of those old camera shots from the 1980s.
Yeah, I haven't seen it for a while.
No, I haven't seen it. I haven't really. I was like, is he wearing contacts? But he looked like a man possessed, and that's what they need.
It's an interesting. It's an interesting, even Kyle's point there at the end, like about even how blindsided O'Brien was, and like at the same point saying how close they were. It doesn't reflect amazingly well on Damien Duff.
No. Well, look, you have to reserve judgment. I mean, if he's totally burnt out, right?
Yeah.
And he can't do anymore, and he's at the end of his tether, then you just have to accept that sometimes that happens to people. But it does feel like it's the type of thing that you would say to one of your pals who is reliant on you for the job. It's like, look, I'm thinking of this, you know. I haven't fully decided yet. What are your thoughts? But obviously, he's a singular being, Duffer.
Yeah, I wouldn't be hammering him for it or anything. It's an interesting, it's so interestingly at odds with the general gist of we are one. And all these guys are the most important things in the world to me, and then just kind of leave all of a sudden.
Yeah.
It must be very tough on them. Very, very tough.
They need to have that men in black approach that Joey O'Brien was talking about there, that this is football, because this is the biggest opportunity that their professional careers, for many of them, are ever going to have. You're in a Champions League qualifier against Linfield the week of the 12th.
Yeah,
like, you know, I mean, it's like whatever else is going on. There's, you know, we should just be talking about policing this week. We shouldn't be talking like policing in form instead of like who's actually going to be the manager. What's how are they going to do this? What, like, you know, they play this game in Anfield. During the Good Friday Agreement conversations. The Shells Linfield, the previous one.
Oh, wow.
Because there was like, Bertie was like, look, we can't be having lads going on the rampage in Dublin. Not when the peace process is such a delicate. I think I'm right about this. Maybe I'm doting, but.
Yeah, it's the manner of the exit is, it's very in character, actually, with Damien Duff and the way he's gone about his business. He's an instinctive guy. Like, he does, like, look what he did for the last week of his tenure. Saying to the world, I have no friends in football, but for everyone at Shells.
Sorry. It was Rangers, not Linfield. That was the ultimate Freudian slip there. Sorry. I mean, sorry. I apologise for the. Whoa.
Terry Kelly here says it was at Tranmere's ground.
Yeah, sorry.
Close enough.
No. There you go. Go home, you're drunk. Go on.
Been to that ground, actually. It's good.
Is it? Yeah. Prenton Park?
Yeah, Tranmere Hartlepool.
Have they moved from Prenton Park now? I think they have they?
There was. Guy called Dale Jennings who played for Tranmere. He was unbelievable. He went to Bayern.
Oh, I'm never recovering from that, am I? Look, I better shut up now before I walk myself into any more
criminate yourself.
It's too late now.
Do you think it'll have a major knock-on effect on the league, say 6 months down the line?
No, I don't think there are really players this year, Shelburne, to be honest.
Sorry, no, but the league as a whole.
Yeah, I'd say so. I think he was huge. Like, I think he was massive. I think leagues get more popular anyway. And thank God for Bowles last night, because we'd be really struggling to talk about the League of Ireland competitively this year if it wasn't for what Bowles did last night. Like, they beat Shamrock Rovers and they beat them well, 2-0. We haven't even talked about that yet, actually. Rovers are better in the second half, but Bowles could have been more than 2 up, definitely, at the break. So they were 6 points behind, no, 9 points behind with 2 games in hand. So the windows is 3 points. And they seem like the only legitimate title challengers. Like, Stephen Kenny, St. Pat's have gone off the boil. They lost again. Don't trust Derry to sustain a challenge. And probably the same with Drogheda. So I think it's left to Bowles. So thankfully for that. But in terms of the popularity of the league, yeah, 100%. But the way that Duff left it was very in character. As I was saying there a second ago, the last week of his tenure, no friends in football except for everyone at Shells. Then they beat Pats and he's down on his knees serenading the fans. Then he leaves without telling even his closest pal about it. It's tough. Like, it's like a negative version of what Jose Mourinho did at the end of Porto and Inter. You know, the Champions League final ceremony, he celebrates. With Porto, takes off the medal, throws it into the crowd, leaves, never to be seen again. With Inter, he hugs Marco Materazzi, see you later. I'm sure it rubbed off on him in a way. He's just doing it in a negative way. The problem is, it's just, even if he had left on a Saturday, even if he had left the next morning, but he left the day before a game. And so they're all scrambling. And, you know, for a guy who said a week ago, like, all I care about is Shells, the only club I love, he left them in a tricky situation for that one game only, which will be forgotten about in a couple of weeks. But he did leave them like that. And I guess that's what love does to people. Like, you hurt the people you love the most, and he seemed to want to hurt them big time.
Each man kills the thing he loves.
I think he left because there's a lot of short-term pain as well about what was happening with the players, and he couldn't stand to be overseeing a group of players that represented the club and him like that. And so he walked out. He has standards and they weren't meeting his standards. But it's a shame for him, a shame for them, because they should be meeting in 10 years, 20 years' time, talking about that amazing year in 2024. But it's always now going to be departed with the fact that he walked out.
Mark Hall says, though, that the thing about the standards, not meeting the standards, is bollocks. Like, you know, we weren't listening to that.
Yeah, well, of course he's going to say that, because he's still there and he's captain.
Yeah, but maybe,
like,
he's right.
So what Duff said on Friday, if he agreed with what Duff said on Friday, then they have serious problems.
Yeah, but
if he was like,
hang
they
on,
were correct.
To go back to yesterday, Vinny was like, he tried to change the style and it wasn't working. So it's a tactical issue as opposed to a standards issue. And if he'd recognised that, maybe he would have been able to think his way out of that conundrum. And so that would put it back on Duff's side of things. I just think that, like, it seems like it was a decision made in emotion as opposed to a decision, you know, because, like, if you're going to be a really great manager, you're going to have these sticky periods, and getting out of those sticky periods is the hallmark of great managers. Like, he's obviously achieved a great thing when it looked like Shamrock Rovers were going to be absolutely unstoppable, and we're seeing they're pretty close to it again this year, right? To be able to get a team who had, I think, the fifth or sixth largest budget last season to win the league, it doesn't happen very often in many leagues. So he's obviously got a lot about him. But this difficult second album, that was the bit where, like, he can ascend to true greatness and then be a legitimate contender for the Ireland job. But I think this damages his prospects when it comes to doing the Ireland job in future.
Rayan Dulcan Keenan at Agresu. Tashianam did tus ocha a hurt don isrocht, lechem ir kema e gulskal limni. Kebea ka mean lat curla de yeshin agarma, no ahru quig garam nua. Ta chlor ir kema lonaim sherha, portaim sherha agus yar chlor e gulskal limni, ta chiapa contuakur vohar and fasa. Be fisrock eg ul.ie.
Right?
Yeah, I just think it's the unpredictability. I don't think anyone wants any part of that, if you're, especially something like the FAI, where it's like Hamer, whatever you think of him, like, the man is nice and steady. He's stable. He's not messing around. Like, he's not going to throw any curveballs at you. Whereas with Duff, you don't have a clue what'll happen one day to the next.
Yeah, that's the con. But then the pro is, then he wins the title when he has no right to win the title.
Well, they had some right, and if you're fair, like, we can't, like,
they were received, I think.
I know, but without kind of glazing over it too much, like, the achievement is astonishing, but, like, it was also an outlier of a year, if you know what I mean. Like, it's not like, again, that's not, they did it, so I'm not slagging them off. They did it.
Any qualifiers beyond that, like, every year is a bit of an outlier because something happens, there's an injury crisis, or, you know, we can come back to this football a little bit later on, just after 9 o'clock. We do want to talk Limerick. You've had plenty of time to be thinking about this now. Arthur, let's be having you.
No, like, it's interesting to read a lot of what's been said. It's interesting, and it's funny, we were referencing before, and Kieran writing about it, and it was interesting. I was certain they'd win. 100% certain. There was not an element. That's naivety. That's silliness, really. But even listening to Ryan yesterday, and he said he's, I think he's been in all but one of Dublin's games. Nobody saw this coming. And what I'm interested in, what I'm thinking about, the bigger picture for it. I think Mick referenced last night on the news round, because he was gleefully telling me beforehand, 13 of the players that featured yesterday, I think, featured in the 2018 final. So it's obviously a squad that's ageing altogether, which opens up the broader question on the longevity of this project and the longevity of the fate of Limerick hurling, and whether it's just the latest in a kind of cycle of boom or bust. And that's
this is the theory. Come on.
Well, it's so if you go back, right, if you look at it, Limerick win their first, so after the club representative thing kind of goes and it's more representative of a county team. I think they win their first in 1918. And so we'll kind of park that. It's a long time ago. But the first period of boom is the 30s into the 40s, right?
Mick Mackey.
Exactly. 30s into the 40s. And that's grand. Three All-Irelands, five finals. Next kind of thing, you have the 70s. So basically in between, there's no final of one Munster Championship. I think between 40 and 1955. They win in 1955, win a Munster Championship. Complete outlier. It comes to nothing. Next All-Ireland in 73. That team gets to three finals, I think in 73, 74 and 80. Win one, lose two. And that's it again until the 90s, where there's two finals. 94, 96, lose both of them. Kind of farcical circumstances in certain regards. Again, you've another outlier in 07. Kind of didn't really, it kind of came out of the blue. And then you have the latest period now. So you basically have two periods. Like Limerick only have 12 All-Irelands, which, and 12 All-Irelands, and 8 of them, if I'm right, I might be slightly wrong on that, but I think 8 of them thereabouts have been won in two bursts. It could be more than that, but that's basically it. And it's an interesting thing now that it's like for a county like Limerick, this is the only one that I can think of that's been built on something county-wide. So like that's 73 when you talk to Eamon Creagan, and it comes off the back of a kind of a schools team. And CBS and Sexton Street and Limerick City, and that kind of is the bolster for it. And the same sort of thing, I think they win the minor All-Ireland in 84, and there's a lot of those guys still around by the 90s. This is the only one that seems to have been built at a countywide level where they kind of had repeated underage success, and there's a very concerted effort to organise things. And I think the ultimate measure of Limerick hurling success isn't necessarily five All-Irelands in 7 years or whatever, or 8 years. It'll be whether they now become a one All-Ireland every decade, 1-2 All-Ireland every decade on average, or slip back into relative obscurity. Because it's quite a strange phenomenon this season where Dublin aside, we're kind of looking at, oh, this is a nice surprise All-Ireland with a lot of different stories where it's Kilkenny, Cork and Tipperary in the semi-finals.
Yeah.
Like, it's disastrous in a sense. It's absolutely disastrous. But it's like, It's such a strange phenomenon at the same time that I think the difference is, so Tipperary have the shortest gap with 6 years. Like there's never been, I would wager, I think the 90s, so I was thinking of this last night, between 94, sorry, are we longer than that? Is it equal or thing that there's been, I don't think you'd ever have had a 6 year spell where Tipperary, Cork or Limerick or Kilkenny wouldn't have won All-Ireland.
So we need the Dubs to...
It's an interesting outlier, because I think if you take Limerick subjectively, and it's a great team, whatever else, that's grand. But like the actual kind of, and we had Dennis Walsh on talking about this not that long ago, the actual benefit of that has been that it's not been one of the usual teams that have been dominating. And if you even take it back to a 10-year spell, so from Kilkenny in 15, then it goes Tipperary, then it's a Galway-Waterford final, it's a Limerick-Galway final. Typical Kenny again, Limerick Waterford, Limerick Cork, Limerick Kilkenny,
Clare beat Cork, and now this year we'll probably have realistically Cork against Tipperary or Kilkenny. And it's just, you don't want, Limerick are almost they're almost a sample for this, that if Limerick do fall away a bit or kind of just join the pack and it just inevitably comes back to those three again, I really don't think that's good for hurling. I really don't think a resumption of the norm, and that's probably what will happen because that's always what's happened, but I just, it's an interesting thing that Limerick have come the closest, Limerick have come the closest of any of the other counties, say from the bottom three down, of looking like one of the top three ever. No one's ever done this from their pack. It's never ever happened. And if it's a case now where they fall away as opposed to maybe establishing a top four or even, you know, I think it just becomes, it becomes, and as an aside, it becomes an increasingly existential threat for hurling because now of how well Gaelic football seems to be doing. That it's like, you, I don't think, it's funny that thing like Cork Dublin will sell out this year, right? So say Cork go on, say Cork win the All-Ireland and say it's Cork Dublin again next year or whoever. You don't have the same excitement again. So that starts disintegrating down, down, down.
I think the Cork, if Cork were to go into a period of dominance now, they will sell out because...
Yeah,
Cork,
for sure, but, maybe, but the numbers. Yeah.
If it was Galway-Dublin in a semi-final, I know very difficult for that to happen, but would that sell out in hurling at the moment? You suspect it probably wouldn't in a semi-final.
No. Do you think it will start to fade away for Limerick now?
I don't know. It's really, really hard because if you go back, it's an odd thing, 10 years ago in the qualifiers, the second round of the qualifiers, Limerick lost by a point to Dublin. And the two counties were on such different trajectories at that stage. So Dublin had should have qualified, probably could have beaten Cork in 2013. By the same token, Limerick had, they were kind of blown open by Clare in that semi-final. But there was no sign of what was coming for Limerick when they lost that. So you would have been kind of crazy to suggest, oh no, this team in 3 years or a new version of this team in 3 years will win in All-Ireland. So it's very hard to predict. I'd find it impossible to say. But you do look and it's like there's not really been much underage success. I don't know if that equates to much. It's hard to know. I know Tommy talking to Kieran McGeaney about Armagh. It's like virtually no underage success, but they've built the most kind of complete squad in the whole of Gaelic football. So it's very hard to know if you're kind of what the measure of it is, because obviously for seniors, underage success doesn't amount to anything. It doesn't matter.
I do remember reading a very well-written book that had a point about the Limerick Academy, where the whole point is not to win tournaments, but to produce players for the senior team. That's your book, by the way.
Yeah, I see someone there, so Sean O'Donoghue, who even asked in there, isn't it good for hurling Limerick are out? It's in the short term, it makes it more competitive and it makes it a more exciting year. Mm-hmm. But I think in the long term, it is not a good prospect if it's going to be Cork, Tipperary particularly, who seem to be coming back strongest of all now with the underage success they have coming through. And Kilkenny are kind of, there's a weird, Kilkenny are like almost by default, they're going to be there every year because they've such an easy run of it.
So you'd argue it's bad just because there'd be one less county contending.
I think so.
That's it.
I think
not to do with Limerick necessarily.
I don't. Dominating is not good for anyone. Like it's not good for any sport. I don't think if Limerick kept going, the centre going.
Were you getting concerned on behalf of hurling in 2023?
Not because you kind of. I'll tell you what had happened. The Munster Championship thing was becoming a bit, because it's so the relevance of it has kind of lessened. It's like, oh, this is kind of getting a bit odd. It's the same team keeps winning it every year. But I don't know. It's an interesting dynamic where I don't think dominance is ever good, but I don't think a reversion to the mean whereby dominance is just spread out to two or three counties is much good either. Like it's not, like even we were talking about it, I was looking up there and I'd be kind of wary to verify this because it seems very low. But we were talking about that 86 final, semi-final between Cork and Antrim. Apparently, I'm just reading there, we'll check it up and verify it, but about 2,000 people were at the game in Croke Park for Cork, Antrim and All-Ireland semi-final.
Oh, that makes sense.
Well, it kind of makes sense, but it makes sense if you look around the rest of the decade, because it's not a very varied decade again in terms of who was winning. And look, there's all sorts of socio-cultural things going on at the time and everything else, but like that's lunacy. That's and I know it's a different format, but like if I just think that kind of, it seems to me that the most enjoyable eras of hurling are defined by some sort of, it's either an incredible standard that the top two are hitting. If it has to be a Kilkenny, Limerick, Cork, where you have the mid-noughties or Kilkenny Tip or whatever else, and that's fine. But like, how many people are remembering, say, that period when Cork fell away and then that even that Kilkenny period at the late 2000s? If not for Kilkenny's dominance, does anyone remember very much of what else was going on at that time? Mm. Like it like the, that's just my only, it's not, I know it sounds slightly not bitter but slightly biased, but it just, that'd be my only concern. It's like, if you lose, because even Clare and Limerick are in a fairly similar situation, where it's like that they're that great team, Clare probably didn't achieve as much as they could have, but they've kind of, Shane O'Donnell, if Shane O'Donnell doesn't come back and Tony Kelly's a year older, and say they fade a little bit, and if Limerick fade a little bit, and if, you know, I just, it's my only concern for it. So it's kind of, that's the onus. That'll be the measure of success for Limerick hurling, if that academy has put into practice a recurring development of players rather than just one astonishing team.
Yeah, on the academy side of things, so now that we're 2 years without Limerick winning the All-Ireland, I don't know if it makes it easier to analyse what actually happens in 2018 and then with the exception of 19 beyond. And are we talking about a freak generation that won't be repeated?
You could be. Like
Remember we asked John Mider a few weeks ago about who would you have, Limerick or Kilkenny as the great, and he was, without hesitation, said Kilkenny. But there's huge arguments for Limerick.
But there's a degree back where you now look at that it was kind of almost just for Kilkenny a slightly more staggered freak generation. Like it's almost impossible that Kilkenny have gone 10 years without an All-Ireland during a time when their route to an All-Ireland semi-final has arguably come easier than ever. Where they're kind, not easier than ever, that's probably slightly disrespectful, but like they've made mincemeat of the rest of Leinster at their kind of will. You know, they're on the same thing, they're on five or six Leinsters in a row. Like it's become a formality for them. And it's kind of mad, but it does strike that between, like, if you think about it, between like whatever the 2000s up till the mid 2010s, where you have a generation where you have Shefflin comes through and Reid comes through and Hogan comes through, and it's this kind of hit after hit after hit after hit. But they haven't done that since. No one's come. Who's come on since Sting of that level? It just happens sometimes, I guess. Mm. But like, I don't think I would be interested to know if anyone knows offhand. I doubt Kilkenny have ever gone 10 years without winning All-Ireland. Certainly in modern history.
Oh, they did between 70. Oh, the team.
They won in 74, anyway.
Okay, and then they won again in 81.
I doubt it. I'd say it's close anyway. You're talking about.
They won again in 82. 82 and 83, they won. 92 and 93.
Yeah. So
they went and then. They didn't win again until
probably 2000 or whatever it was. Yeah.
So it's not. It's kind of that's the.
But that's almost that's the benchmark.
But then they would win. Then they become the team.
Rattle off, yeah. So that's a bit of an anomaly as well. Like it's just you want as many teams competitive as possible. Really. Yeah.
There's one commentator saying like, "Oh, Limerick missed one semi-final in 8 years, and hurling is in crisis. Give me a break."
But it's not crisis.
It's not crisis.
We're not saying it's crisis. We're actually asking. What does that mean to Limerick? What happens next year and beyond? But also, like hurling is a very small sport at the elite level, so there is
tiny,
a worry.
Tiny.
There's a worry. If one of the main boys slip away, that is a concern.
And it's hard. It probably has been a bit too drastic after 2 years. But you probably have a situation now where they're not getting back to the level they were at. That's gone. Certainly, the sustained thing. You reckon? I don't know. You'd reckon, but. It is just I as a onlooker now and who gets to watch it kind of objectively, relatively speaking, without personal biases, for the rest of the year, it's like, Jesus, a year where it's like, I know that if the Cork outpouring would be incredible, and it's not, you know, there's circumstances in that, but at the same time, it's like, it's Cork. It's like, it's still like, it's like seeing Kerry winning All-Ireland in football. It's like, I don't care how long it's been, it's still Kerry.
Yeah.
It's like, it's not, there's no grade. There, again,
that's you to say.
It's just the reality of it. It's like oh cool, yeah. Anyway,
are you excited about it, this prospect?
Yeah, totally. Yeah. Who played the more attractive, sexy hurling? Like I'm trying to think of both sides of their peak. So Kilkenny was probably what, the 2008 final against Waterford when it became embarrassing really quickly.
No,
and Limerick was probably
against Cork.
Limerick was probably Cork 21.
I don't think
they scored like 40 odd points in that.
Yeah, but I don't think that's actually.
But who played the more attractive hurling overall? I'm just giving the peak example of two examples of the peak of each side.
Okay, but actually. They're at their most exciting when they're put to the pin of their collar, as opposed to, because that's like a concert where you go.
Well,
and
no, because we know, but the pin of the collar, we know exactly what they do there.
But who's sexiest when they're at the pin of the collar?
Yeah, like who?
That's a better question. I think. Sorry, I'm not editing your question here live on air. But like that were two bloodless games. They were totally bloodless. Cork and Waterford both collapsed. They swooned on the day. You talk to players afterwards about what happened and. None of them feel like they performed.
I'm asking, how did they bend teams to their will, like, and in what way did they go about?
Well, the All-Ireland final.
Or who went about it more attractively in the eye?
The All-Ireland final that Tipperary fans still give out about the penalty that Sheffin gets it, they all say, well, still wasn't a penalty, that they win the four in a row with. I think that's the signature performance from, obviously people will talk about the Waterford game as like the first wide in the 67th minute or whatever it was.
We want the answers to two different questions here.
Yeah, but, well, like, okay, sexy routes of teams, they're great to watch and they're you know, they're important in terms of this, this is the standard, but like, when you are actually up against it, what do you do? What is your pattern of play? Like, I think Limerick changed the style of hurling and people have caught up with that now over the last two seasons in a way that we didn't think they were going to be able to. I do think because of the staggering of the generations, when history comes to go, which of these two teams is the greatest? If you're allowed to, if you're allowed to say the Shefflin era, then it ends up being Kilkenny, but that's probably an unfair conversation too.
Oh yeah.
Well, now look, Limerick come back and do the next two.
I don't know. If FIFA brought back GA properly, you know, it'd be great. That'd be the Legends game that everyone would play.
If the
well, what's your answer?
I found
Kilkenny's dominance really cold at the time, but that's understandable considering you look at who's on the other side of it a lot. Limerick, like, Cian Lynch makes me smile, like, even against Cork this year. Which I was laughing. I think I texted you, like, I was just laughing at one point. I was like, this is outrageous what he's doing. And I never got that with Kilkenny. It was just there. Like, John Miner's point a few weeks ago was like, they didn't have a weakness. And that's a good point. It's a good way to sum up Kilkenny. But not having a weakness doesn't make me remember them fondly. That's unrelatable.
As objective as it can be, I prefer Kilkenny, that Kilkenny team. Just in terms of like, they were, I know we're going off topic, but like, it was such an astonishing group of players all at once. And you go back and you're like, I was talking to Mick about this last week. I don't know what team we were looking at. Maybe it was the 2011 or 2012 front six at the kind of tail end of Shefflin. But when you have like Brennan and Hogan and Power, and it's like this front six that are just like Larkin, it's like,
I think as well, the fact that there were so many different sizes and shapes.
Yeah.
On the radio the other day said, and off the wall said, I mean, when Ryan O'Dwyer was like, I think I'm writing this. Aaron Gillan is the smallest of the Limerick forwards and he's 6'1". And you're like, and there's nothing wrong with that, right? They came.
He doesn't look 6'1".
Cian Lynch must be, maybe he's playing midfield.
I'd say David Reedy might be a bit short. Anyway, but.
Largely, they are a team of absolute monsters with incredible stick work. Whereas, if you look at the size and shapes and the body types of the Kilkenny players, they're just, it's like they're from a different era.
Yeah, it's like a different sport altogether.
You talk about like, that era, talk about Brian Cody too, and maybe they're just playing it down too, but that there wasn't an awful lot of strategy, and it was Brian Cody's famous thing, you know, if I have to tell an intercounty player how to play, he shouldn't be playing at this level. But I imagine they had some sort of opposition analysis or something, but it was like the vibe you get off that era was that they played off pure instinct and that instinct was generational.
We'll come back to this.